Welcome to Business and Oil. Articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Sunday, January 12, 2020. Section F. Oil Report. Path to Profits. New study offers five levers to improve service company profits by Mella McEwen. Oilfield service firms were hard hit when oil prices cratered in late 2014, and many continue to struggle as oil prices range between $50 and $60 a barrel and operators reduce activity levels. One issue is that those companies continue to rely on a business model built on $100 oil prices, according to a study issued by Deloitte. In Down But Not Out, Transforming Oil Field Services, the consulting and advisory firm offered what it called five levers to improve performance. Doing so could mean an additional $20 billion in earnings for the 70 service companies Deloitte analyzed for the study, and potentially in excess of $30 billion more in earnings across the entire sector. First, Deloitte said service companies should realistically assess whether it still makes sense to service their markets in the same capacity as when oil was $100 a barrel, or whether to consolidate operations, divest assets, or exit service lines altogether. Secondly, service companies should base their services on customer behavior, creating a bundle of services with a pricing structure that is flexible enough to offer a sustainable margin, and leading service providers should go to a more structured and sophisticated approach to pricing. Service companies can raise revenue and cut costs by reviewing their operating models and redeploying assets more effectively, the firm said. The fundamental ability to conduct business planning should be improved, allowing each part of the company to adjust their capabilities to meet demand according to that plan, even if it often changes. The fifth lever service companies can use is to rethink how they deliver services and equipment with technology, not offering data just as a service solution, but using data to enhance existing capabilities, Deloitte said. Digitalization can let service companies not only move faster, but connect equipment technologies together to improve delivery at lower costs. Sean Maxson, principal and oil field services practice lead at Deloitte, discussed in an email the study and how service companies are reacting to its recommendations. Question: how receptive do you think service firms would be to these strategies? Answer: we are already seeing service firms announce more aggressive actions to optimize their portfolios and align their operating models with the new market normal. For example, shifting to more basin-specific offerings and operating models to optimize returns on capital. The next step is to invest in new technologies, capabilities, and business models that will help operators enhance recovery, boost productivity, and reduce carbon emissions. For example, we are seeing oil field service companies invest in next-generation sensor and digital technologies to enable operators to optimize production and more efficiently respond to pump failures by leveraging advanced supply chain solutions. Question: what services do you see E&P companies demanding that service companies should focus on? Answer: E&P companies are clearly demanding that service companies provide cost-effective solutions that enable them to improve returns on capital. They are also looking for the service companies to invest in differentiated technology solutions and capabilities that will enable the next level of productivity and reduce carbon emissions. Question: we see the E&P sector working to implement cash discipline, generate cash flow, and return excess cash flow to shareholders. Do you see service companies experiencing similar restraints? Answer: The services sector is experiencing the same restraints and challenges as the broader E&P sector. Investors are focused on margins, capital returns, and free cash flow. Question: how long do you think it would take for these recommended strategies to take effect, and how would they affect both the service and E&P sectors? Answer: we are already seeing oil field service companies take much more aggressive actions to optimize their portfolios and streamline their operations to improve service delivery efficiency and returns. This will benefit both the service and E&P companies by creating increased service efficiency and a more sustainable industry structure. It will also benefit both the service and E&P companies by providing the industry with more capital to invest in the technologies and capabilities needed to drive the next level of productivity. The challenge for the industry is going to be finding a new equilibrium that provides sustainable financial returns across the value chain. PBPA to honor Dick Salisbury as Top Hand by Mella McEwen. The Permian Basin Petroleum Association, PBPA, will bestow its 40th Top Hand Award on Odessan Dick Salisbury, founder of Salisbury Industries. The award will be presented at a banquet Thursday at the Petroleum Club. We are honored to be able to present Dick Salisbury the 2019 PBPA Top Hand Award this year, Ben Shepard, PBPA president, said via email. From humble beginnings, Dick has created a fantastic business employing thousands of Permian Basin folks over the last 50 years. His contributions to Odessa and the rest of the basin have been enormous. He represents all of the top qualities of a PBPA top hand. Salisbury said he's honored to receive the award. "The greatest thing is to be a top hand, whether you're called that or not," he said in a phone interview. The Smackover, Arkansas native arrived in West Texas in 1962. He first went to Wickett to work at Dixie Electric. "I assumed I'd be here 3 or 4 years and then go back to Arkansas. I've been here close to 60 years," he said. He went on to found Salisbury Electric, then added Salcon Construction Company, Eagle Instrumentation to provide pneumatic services, and then Salisbury Engineering and Construction. He consolidated the companies into Salisbury Industries, which now employs more than 5,000 people. "I didn't think it would grow like that," he said. "I didn't set a goal. My goal was doing the best I could." He said he has tried to ensure he and his employees work with integrity and try to be the best they can at what they're doing. "It's more about the work, the people, the families who work for you. It's important to make a profit because without a profit, you don't have a business. But if you do good work and the people enjoy what they're doing, then you have a profit," he said. And he tries to ensure he gives back the blessings he has received, whether it's locally, statewide, or globally. "You need to have a giving heart to be a top hand. If you're not willing to give, if you only want to take, you're not a top hand," he said. But above all, Salisbury said he remembers where his blessings come from. "Everything we've got comes from the Lord. He gives us talent. He opens doors for us," Salisbury said. Oilfield Labs debuts expansion that doubles Midland footprint by Mella McEwen. Oilfield Labs of America is preparing to debut its expanded Midland operations that will double the company's local footprint. "Our company opened its doors 4.5 years ago, and we never anticipated the opportunities available to us, not just in the Permian Basin, but in several regions," Amanda North, the Houston-based firm's director of lab operations, said in a phone interview. "We're excited about the chance to expand our Midland facility, double its capacity, and make a little more of a mark in the Permian Basin with our customers," she added, saying the expansion is expected to open Wednesday. The expansion involves not only expanding its existing building, but adding a second building, giving Oil Field Labs an additional 4,000 square feet of lab space, bringing the company's lab space in Midland to more than 9,000 square feet and 800 square feet of office and administrative space, including a break room. "We are a commercial laboratory, a third-party, unbiased lab," said North. "Our goal is to deliver high-quality data at a reasonable price. We serve the oil and gas industry, analyzing water, oil, anything that comes from the ground. The biggest demand the company is seeing is from operators who want to do more testing and analytics at their well sites," she said. "The company has field teams that go out to the sites to conduct on-site testing, and the lab at 3302 Pilot Avenue is equipped to conduct high-end, very sensitive analytics," she said. "Everything goes back to the data, and with the demand for evidence behind every reason why action is taken, it's more important than it has been. There's still a lot to learn, but I believe the industry is learning and growing," North said. "We're fortunate to be at the forefront of the industry. The projects we're involved in require deeper dives into the data and the testing methods used. With the state-of-the-art equipment in our labs, we're at more of an advantage. There's always something to be learned, and we're happy to learn." Not only will the expansion provide more space for current testing and operations, but it will allow the company to integrate more services into its program this year, she said. "Space is always a big factor when you're working in close quarters. With the demand for more of what we currently offer, plus bringing in new methods and testing equipment, expansion was necessary. That expansion includes the company's workforce, which Oilfield Labs expects to increase this year. We will be looking for driven professionals looking for a career outside the traditional oil field," North said. "We value integrity above all else, and there are some amazing people in the Permian Basin we've been fortunate to scoop up. We're also looking for technical expertise." In addition to the Midland location, the company has full-service labs in Oklahoma City and Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Hello, I'm Lynn, reading the Odessa American front page for Wednesday, January 15th, 2020. Commissioners table OT issue. Most county employees get comp time rather than overtime. IOA News at OAOA.com. Ector County commissioners discussed moving from comp time to overtime and extending raises to deputies doing courthouse security, but delayed taking action. The overtime to comp time item was brought forward by Maintenance Director Charles Pierce. Pierce said his department is in charge of all the buildings in the county and is on call 24 hours a day. Pierce said he is 4 employees short and it's difficult to hire people on the comp time policy. He added that his employees spend a lot of time at the Ector County Detention Center and Youth Center. Human Resources Director Pat Patton said the comp time policy has been in place since 1984 or 1985. She added that the cemetery staff, for example, is so short right now that they can't let employees take comp time. Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons said it would be a deviation from a long-standing policy to start paying overtime. He wanted to carry the item over to the next agenda and table it, which the other commissioners agreed to. Simmons said at some point the county may have to move away from the comp time policy. "I'm sure it's been discussed from time to time. It really depends on when the oil field is booming and we're in competition with other businesses. It's harder to hire employees, and if they can go and earn and be paid for overtime elsewhere and also at a higher salary, that's much more attractive. but Patton said the court has to manage taxpayer dollars. Any employee who starts here signs that they understand that's the policy, Patton said. Sheriff Mike Griffiths said he didn't recall asking about raises for courthouse security who work under the sheriff's office. Griffiths said it covers five people who are all certified peace officers. And again, if we were to get a vacancy there, I may have a hard time filling it because those individuals didn't get that 10% raise that all the other individuals in the sheriff's office got last year, Griffiths said. I'll take the blame for it. I'm taking the blame that it was my oversight and we just didn't get it done, he added. On a separate item, commissioners approved the purchase of equipment for the jail expansion project, a budget amendment to the jail expansion fund, departmental furniture and equipment and office supplies for a total of $60,900. Lind said this includes items such as chairs, tables, and breathing apparatus for fire protection. Pierce said he is waiting for word from the state jail inspector on when the inspection will be, but expects it to be next week. Commissioners also heard a presentation from the public power pool, approved the appointment of Betty Walker, Joan Hurd, Selena Brito to the Ector County Child Services Board to serve a two-year term beginning this month. Approved accepting a donation of $500 from Jesus Vela, doing business as Aloha Therapy for the Ector County Sheriff's Office. Approved 2020 seal coat projects. Approved bid specifications on liquid asphalt emulsion, asphalt patching material, graded base material, seal coat aggregate, water, and pit run caliche. Approved a required resolution to apply for grant funds with the Permian Basin Regional Planning Commission for a regional solid waste grants program. Approved an agreement for continuing disclosure services by and between Ector County and HTS Continuing Disclosure Services, a division of Hilltop Securities, Inc., in regard to annual filing of continuing disclosure information. Approved accepting an award for the 2019 SCAAP State Criminal Alien Assistance Program grant for $15,513. Approved a request from the county attorney to hire an attorney at a Step 3 due to experience. Approved a request from the district attorney to hire an attorney at a Step 9 due to experience. Approved a repeat for Sierra Rica Springs being a plat of a 6.90-acre tract out of Section 17 and 18, Block 43, T-2-S, T&P RY County Survey. Approved a request to repeat Alexa Estates, the E/2 of Lot 1, Block 8, Pleasant Farm Subdivision. Approved action on a proposed Ector County MHRC development on 3 Logistics RV Park, 1760 North Farm to Market Road, 866. Approved a replat of Lot 4, Block 29, Pleasant Farm Subdivision, third filing. Approved a replat of East 348.88 of the West 554.88 feet of the South 632.50 feet of Lot 2, Block 8, Pleasant Farm Subdivision. Approved a line item transfer to Highways and Streets, equipment rental, for $18,000 from Highway and Streets Road Maintenance. approved a budget amendment to the General Fund, County Court at Law No. 1, Departmental Furniture and Equipment from Unreserved Fund Balance for $2,000. Approved the Accounts Payable Fund Requirements Report. There was no executive session. MyOAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners Court. TINYURL.com/UD74D92.
This article is entitled City Council Members to Decide Fate of Hillcrest Village. Officials expect heavy opposition regarding a West Midland apartment complex being built to provide less expensive housing for taxing entity employees. By Stuart Doreen. The new Midland City Council on Tuesday will determine the fate of a 200-unit development expected to provide affordable housing for employees of Midland ISD and Midland Memorial Hospital and first responders. Hillcrest Village is a proposed multifamily development located on nearly 20 acres on Midland Drive, just west of Doug Russell Pool. The applicant, the Midland Community Development Corporation, is requesting a rezone of the property to a low-density apartment complex. City documents show the proposed site plan calls for 20 two-story buildings, a clubhouse, and dog park. The city also reports that adequate parking is provided with a total of 488 spaces, 246 surface spaces, and 242 garage spaces. 60% of the units would be one-bedroom, 30% would be two-bedroom, and the rest three-bedroom, officials said previously. The city's Planning and Zoning Commission approved the rezoning request during a November meeting, but some Midlanders are not in favor of the addition to West Midland. City documents show staff has received 100 written objection letters as of January 8th. 30.9% of those objecting within the 200-foot notification area. Staff also received a petition. The petition, dated October 9th, was to the Planning and Zoning Commission, the mayor, and the rest of Midland City Council. Homeowners and residents of the Hillcrest Acres, Alamo Heights, Bel Air, Westcliff, and Westgate subdivisions stated 17 reasons for their opposition. These include: residents favor single-family homes in that area. There are no city water lines and no nearby sewer lines. All houses between Princeton and Cuthbert Avenues on the north and south between Midland Drive and almost to Woodcrest Drive on the east and west are on water wells and septic systems. The neighborhood is not economically depressed and does not fit the mission statement of the Midland Community Development Corporation. These apartments would be tax-exempt because the MCDC retains ownership. Traffic will be increased and safety will be decreased in the neighborhood. The petition also states that some residents near the proposed development have lived there since the 1960s and that all but one home in the block of Princeton Avenue between Midland Drive and Woodcrest Drive are occupied by the property owner. City officials expect a full house for the council meeting. If a previous presentation in front of the Midland Development Corporation is any indication, city leaders will hear that the Hillcrest Village lease rates for a single bedroom is expected to be 30 to 50% less than current rates at other Class A properties. Project officials said at the commission's October meeting that already there are non-binding agreements for as many as 120 total units with Midland Memorial and MISD. Hillcrest Village carries a total development cost of $41.7 million. Project officials said during the October meeting that much of that money will come from banks, but an estimated equity of $14 million is needed to keep rents lower. Project officials also said they would be asking for additional money from the MDC. Meeting notes. The Midland City Council typically meets on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month. Tuesday's meeting will begin at 10 a.m. This will be the first meeting of the new City Council, which includes Mayor-elect Patrick Payton. Also expected to attend their first meetings are Jack Ladd Jr. of District 3 and Lori Blong of District 4. All three were elected in November. Other members of the council will be current District 1 Representative Scott Dufford, District 2 Representative John B. Love III, and at-large representatives Spencer Robnett and Michael Trost. This article is entitled Parsley CEO, 2020 Year of Stabilization. Industry has built a business model that will demonstrate unconventional shales can deliver cash flow, by Mella McEwen. A new year means a new energy industry, according to Matt Gallagher, President and Chief Executive Officer of Parsley Energy. 2019 was a year of transition. 2020 will be a year of stabilization, he told the Reporter Telegram in an interview discussing Parsley's just-completed acquisition of Jagged Peak Energy. Parsley and others discovered a resource in the Permian Basin or re-energized a resource over the past decade, and investors have not seen that benefit, he said. Now is the time to generate cash flow and give back capital and return on capital to the investors. He said he believes the unconventional shales that have put a spotlight on the Permian Basin will begin to deliver in 2020 because unconventional shale operators have moved on from growth mode to stabilization and building a business model that is not reactive to oil price fluctuations. I'm optimistic we can demonstrate what the business of unconventional shales can deliver, that we can deliver free cash flow, Gallagher said. Jagged Peak, whose acquisition was announced just 90 days ago, is a natural fit for the company because its Delaware Basin assets are in the same zip code, the same neighborhood. It lets us do more of the same at a lower unit cost, he said. The 90-day time frame from the time the deal was announced until last week's completion brought urgency with the legal side of closing the acquisition. Combining our processes and procedures will be done within 60 days, Gallagher said. It's incumbent upon us in 2020 to deliver a unified company. A majority of Jagged Peak's Delaware Basin acreage directly offset Parsley's legacy position, and the combination will give Parsley approximately 140,000 net acres in the Midland Basin and a highly contiguous 120,000 net acres in the Delaware. Gallagher said activity levels will be two-thirds Midland Basin, one-third Delaware Basin. When we combine the two companies, we'll do less and generate more cash flow. We will have more cash flow and stable growth, he said. It's anticipated the deal will generate general and administrative cost savings of $25 million in the first year and $40 to $50 million annually thereafter. The Permian Basin is already among the lowest cost, if not the lowest cost basin to operate in, and continued technical advances and efficiency gains should continue that trend, Gallagher said. Those gains and the ability to improve supply chains, hire and train staff properly, should benefit both operators and service companies, he said. When he announced the deal in mid-October, Gallagher said it was the beginning of consolidation in the industry. He said last Friday that he still believes this. With our acquisition and WPX's acquisition of Felix Energy, you're seeing the playbook. Synergies, a nearby fit, accretive cash flow, he said. And with the recent relative run-up in oil prices, 2020 will have accelerated merger and acquisition activity, he said. This article is entitled, Midland County Reports Lowest Sales Tax Collection Since April 2018, from Staff Reports. Midland County's sales tax collection fell 17.18% compared to January of last year, according to the Texas Comptroller's Office. The collection, $4,182,719, was the lowest since April 2018. Through the first 2 months of the county's fiscal year, $9.355 million has been collected, an 8.88% decrease year over year. Sales tax collections also dropped for the city of Midland, 9.41%, and the city of Odessa, 15.7%.
Thank you for listening to this week's Business and Oil articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. read by volunteers at the Recording Library of West Texas. Don't forget, you can also hear this program by calling the telephone reader at 432-617-5555 and by downloading at recordinglibrary.org.